rides, and lots of family-friendly and women-only events, too.
The festival wraps up with the rabble-rousing, hay-kicking fun of the Multnomah County Bike Fair on Saturday, June 26th.
Yeehaw!
For times and locations of all events, pick up your Pedalpalooza calendar at your neighborhood bike shop or look for it in the June 10th edition of the Mercury.
You can also visit shift2bikes.org.
Pedalpalooza, 2 weeks of pure bike fun in June.
Pedalpalooza is co-sponsored by KBOO Radio.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Up next, Per Fogering interviews Justin Salix about how Haiti is faring under the new puppet government. And at 10:30, it's Sounds of Awareness with Paul Van Dyke. Stay tuned now for Per Fogering and his guest, Justin Salix.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogering, KBOO News and Public Affairs, and our guest today is Justin Salix, who is an activist and writer living in Texas, who has recently written an article on what's going on in Haiti right now, and the title of that is Let Them Eat Gruel. I saw it on ZNet on the website, and hello, Justin, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Was that article also in the in Z magazine, the printed edition?
No, it wasn't in the print edition of Z. It was on ZNet, but not in the print edition.
Right.
It also appeared in the San Francisco Bay View, which is a newspaper. So.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you do? And you live in San Antonio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you are a student there, and.
Yes, I'm a student activist here in San Antonio. Work mostly on local issues, but I do write about national issues and for ZNet and other progressive news outlets. Haiti is of particular interest to me because while I'm a history major here and I'm working on my history degree, and Haiti has a really interesting history. And this latest chapter is just the latest in a long episode of really sad episodes of violence and military coups that have happened in Haiti.
Yeah, well, the amazing thing about Haiti, they were established, 200 years ago with a successful slave rebellion.
That's right, the only successful slave rebellion in world history, actually. This army of slaves defeated the army of Napoleon, which at the time was, you know, the greatest army in the history of the entire planet. And so that really put a crack in the foundation of white supremacy, which was really popular at the time, and really scared the Southerners in the southern United States, you know, that they would follow the Haiti's example and have their slaves rise up against them. So, yeah, that's how Haiti started, and they've been punished for it ever since.
Well, they even scared President Thomas Jefferson.
Definitely. Yeah, he imposed, I believe the United States imposed sanctions on Haiti afterwards, along with the rest of the international community sort of descended on them, and France forced them to pay millions of dollars in reparations to the French slave owners in order for them to recognize the new Haitian Republic. So, and more recently, President Aristide called for France to repay that money to Haiti, which in today's dollars would be about $21 billion with interest. So, France obviously had no problem seeing Aristide gone.
So in a sense, the Haitians were forced to buy their freedom.
Exactly.
It's amazing, and when you think about it, that the slaves had to repay their owners for lost property damage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gosh, you know, it just and Thomas Jefferson went along. How long was it before the U.S. recognized Haiti?
I believe it was shortly after the Civil War that they recognized Haiti. Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist here in the United States, actually became the ambassador to Haiti shortly after the Civil War.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, I believe it was in the 1860s or 1870s.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have to go through the whole of the horrible history, but let's talk about what's going on now. In your article, you talk about this interim president, whatever he is, Gerard Latortue, which in French that means turtle. I wonder if there's any significance in that.
Yeah, well, Gerard Latortue is a technocrat, a very wealthy man who's been living in Boca Raton, Florida, for about the past 15 years. And he was recently brought back into Haiti to serve as prime minister. He has no base of support within Haiti. People are calling it the Boca Raton regime because so many of the people in the new government come from Florida. And actually, according to the Haitian Constitution, in order to hold the office of prime minister, you have to have resided in Haiti for the past 5 years, which Latortue obviously hasn't done. So he's there, and he's somewhat of a buffoon. He flew into the northern part of Haiti to Gonaïves, and he praised the so-called rebels as freedom fighters, an act that even upset, you know, the administration here, because that's very doesn't really reflect well on his regime that he would be praising these people as freedom fighters, because a lot of these people that were involved in the rebellion are former death squad leaders, drug dealers, a lot of unsavory characters. So in my article, what I talked about was a recent comment that he made. See, as a result of the rebellion, the cost of living in Haiti has skyrocketed. That includes the cost of fuel, electricity, of water, and of rice. And rice is the main staple food of the Haitian diet. And the price of rice has more than doubled over the past few months. And in response, Gerard Latortue said that Haitians should adjust their eating habits and consume corn gruel and cassava root and other foods that are seen as of lesser quality but are cheaper foods. And so I thought that it was more than a little, maybe, I don't know, condescending or somewhat pompous for this fat, you know, overfed, overprivileged aristocrat to be lecturing a starving population of Haitians about their eating habits while, you know, his government basically does nothing to help alleviate the problem.
Brings to mind Queen Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, that's actually where I got the let them eat gruel from, let them eat cake. So.
And you wonder if eventually Latortue may face the same fate or something, or a similar fate, put it that way.
Well, I know plenty of Haitians who would like to see that happen, but he has the backing of a lot of powerful people, both in Haiti and in the international community, so it looks like he's... right now, the aid is being poured into Haiti to try to shore up his regime, his hold on power. And elections aren't going to be held until 2005, which is a really ridiculously long time.
Early that year, or when?
They haven't said. Probably early 2005, but even still, it's you know, a while from now. In 1994, when Aristide was brought back by President Clinton, they organized elections within 8 months, and back then the conditions were even worse than they are now. So for them to wait this long for new elections is kind of, it's very suspect. To me, personally, it seems like an attempt to forestall the elections as long as possible so that they can repress or break apart and undermine the Lava Lost coalition that exists now to make sure that it's not a viable political force by the time the elections roll around. Because if elections were held today, Aristide's party, Family Lava Lost, would easily sweep the elections. There's no question about that. Even USAID's own poll of the Haitian population shows that Aristide and Family Lava Lost is by far the most popular political organization in the country.
Is there any move to move up the elections, or is it just not being
done? Well, right now, an electoral council has been formed, a provisional electoral council. Lava Lost, the largest political organization in the country, is not part of the Electoral Council. They were pressuring the government to stop the campaign of repression that's going on against their party before they would participate in the elections. And Latortue and company basically said that there is no campaign of repression, and you know they're trying to forestall the process, and so they formed the Electoral Council without Lava Lost. And so all of these different groups and segments of Haitian society are represented, except for Lava Lost, which represents the majority of the Haitian population, particularly the poor people in Port-au-Prince and in the rural areas.
If when elections, whenever they are held, will Aristide be allowed to run?
That's an interesting question. I seriously doubt the Bush administration or the people in Haiti will allow him to return. He obviously...
Well, hopefully it will not be a Bush administration when they have...
Well, hopefully, but during the campaign, Kerry actually said some things that sounded kind of good about Haiti, but since then he's kind of watered down his opinions about the situation there. But Aristide, he's currently writing a book, he says, about what really happened, and so we should all be looking forward to that. He says his stay in South Africa, which is where he is right now, is only temporary. So he has plans to go back to Haiti, but I'd imagine it'd be really difficult for him to get there considering the people he's up against.
Well, now he was in Jamaica for quite a while. What are the other Caribbean nations doing? Anything at all?
CARICOM, the Organization of Caribbean States, is pressing for an investigation into the circumstances of his ouster. The CARICOM has not recognized the new government of Haiti, nor has the African Union. And the African Union and CARICOM together make up one-third of the entire United Nations in terms of the countries represented there. So that's a lot of people not recognizing this new government. Unfortunately, it's mostly poor countries, and they don't carry as much weight in the Security Council or in the General Assembly of the UN. But the CARICOM nations are pressing for the OAS, the Organization of American States, to investigate the circumstances of Aristide's ouster. And it doesn't look like they're going to be able to get it done because the United States is putting enormous pressure on Jamaica and the other CARICOM nations. And remember, a lot of these countries are dependent on U.S. aid and U.S. Support and economic assistance to basically get by. And so the United States sort of has an enormous veto power over what these countries do. And they're exerting all of that influence right now on those countries to let the Aristide issue go by the wayside.
I understand that the United States has put some kind of sanctions on a Jamaican hotel business for doing business with Cuba.
Oh, really? I haven't heard about that, but it wouldn't surprise me. They're putting, any country that does business with Cuba the United States isn't very, doesn't like that. In Haiti, Cuba has a contract with Haiti in which Cuban doctors would go over to Haiti, several hundred of them, and work in rural areas that desperately need medical staff and people and people with medical knowledge. Haiti has a desperate shortage of doctors. Actually, Venezuela has a similar program that they do with Cuba, and where Cuban doctors come and work with people there.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States has never really liked that arrangement. And in the Venezuelan media, you hear all these rumors about how the doctors are actually like spies of Fidel Castro that are indoctrinating the peasants into his, you know, vicious communist ideology. So now in Haiti, the contract that the Haitian government had with Cuba is reportedly under review by the La Tortue government, and so they might end up pulling those doctors out of Haiti, which would be just awful because they desperately need those doctors. In fact, during the recent crisis when a lot of people were dying, those Haitian doctors saved many, many lives, and even the press here in the United States kind of had to acknowledge that these people were really doing a lot of good over there.
I think if nothing else, that would be a PR disaster. I mean, if they actually have pictures in the papers of Cuban doctors being expelled from Haiti and nobody else coming in to replace them, I mean...
Exactly. In fact, part of the job of those Cuban doctors is to train Haitians, indigenous people in Haiti, to become doctors and work in rural areas. Aristide started a university, I believe it's called the University of Peace in Port-au-Prince, where those doctors were being trained and the Cuban doctors were working there as instructors. And that university is now closed down because the U.S. occupying forces were using it as a base for their operations. And so the students who were being instructed at that university kept pleading to the government to get the troops out of there so they could go back to school and learn what they needed to learn, because Haiti desperately needs doctors, as I said. But the troops stayed there, and now that they're pulling out, I don't know if classes are going to resume or what, but for the longest time, they were shut out.
You mentioned Venezuela. You know, Venezuela has been providing oh, I don't know, oil at some kind of a discount to Cuba and a whole lot of other nations in, well, all throughout Latin America. I think they just sent a shipment of oil to Argentina. Now, I imagine they had, at one time, they had some kind of arrangement with Haiti. I wonder if that is still in effect, or are they going to withhold the oil until there's a democracy in Haiti?
I don't know, but Venezuela is definitely not recognizing the new government. Hugo Chavez gave a speech shortly after the coup in which he stated firmly that the elected president of Haiti is named Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So I don't know. It's unclear whether what kind of attitude they'll take towards Haiti. Like Brazil, I believe Brazil doesn't recognize the new government either, or had, you know, concerns over Aristide's ouster. But at the same time, they're doing what they can to help with the crisis that is going on there. Because even though they don't want to recognize the new government, they say, well, it's there, so we might as well work with it and try to help people who are suffering right now. So I can understand that position, and I believe Brazil is sending peacekeepers over there. But it's really a hard decision, because mm-hmm. you're torn between supporting, you know, what you know is an illegitimate government that's going to take Haiti down the wrong path, but at the same time, people are dying and people need help. So you almost have to work with the people that are there.
Right. You know, another figure in this new government is Andy Arpaid. Can you tell us a little about him?
Andy Arpaid. Well, his name is Andre Arpaid.
Andre Arpaid. Well, he's sort of American.
His name is Andy, I guess, because it's kind of hard to imagine somebody named Andy being a bad guy. But
well, he's sort of an American Haitian, I believe.
No, he's a Lebanese American.
Oh, okay.
And he owns sweatshops in Haiti. He's one of Haiti's largest sweatshop owners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always say, Haiti's the poorest country in the hemisphere. That's a line you always hear in the news reports. What you don't hear is that Haiti also has more millionaires than any other country in the Caribbean. And Andre Arpaid is one of those millionaires. And he was the leading spokesman for the Group 184 and the Democratic Convergence, which was the so-called political opposition to President Aristide that was cobbled together from various political parties with funds from the National Endowment for Democracy and the International Republican Institute here in the United States. And so Andy Arpaid, he's a sweatshop owner, and he is known for being really hostile to unions. In fact, he pulled a gun on a union organizer at one point on one of his properties. And he was there through the whole uprising and the recent coup. And now with this new government in place, it's obviously going to be people like him whose agenda gets put at the forefront of the new government.
Yeah, it's, of course, right now Haiti's in the news because of these horrible floods and the deforestation has aggravated the effect of those floods. Well, I mean, the deforestation, my understanding is that it's because the Haitian people, the only way they can cook their food is by, over charcoal. So they have to cut down trees to make charcoal. At one time, Haiti was practically covered with forests, huge trees that no longer exist, except maybe in a museum someplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, during the colonial times, Haiti was absolutely covered in trees. If you read descriptions of the country from that time, it looks absolutely nothing like what it looks like now. But peasants in rural Haiti, see, there's no electricity in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. There's only electricity in the big cities. And so in order to cook their food, they have to have charcoal, so they go and cut down trees from the mountainside. They know the importance of trees. It's not that they're stupid and they don't know this. They know that they need trees to prevent runoff and to keep from washing away the topsoil. But when you have to eat, so they end up going and cutting down these trees. And oftentimes they cut down the trees and then use the charcoal to sell for money, which is, there's always a high demand for charcoal in Haiti because about 70% of the population is dependent on charcoal to cook their food. So, yeah, that with the increasing population in Haiti over the past several decades, that problem has really gotten to epidemic proportions. Deforestation has been a problem for the past 100 or 150 years in Haiti, but it's really gotten bad since about the 1960s, 1970s due to hurricanes and the increase in population.
You know, I mean, even a simple thing like solar ovens or solar electricity could do a lot to alleviate that. I mean, regardless of the political situation, I just saw in the paper today that there's a UN, so-called UN force in Haiti now, U.S. and Canada and France, and they mentioned something about a tree planting thing.
Oh, yeah, this is Gerard Latour's idea. He wants to take the rebels from that overran the country and killed all these people. Mm-hmm. These rebels, people like Guy Philippe, who was a police chief and tried to lead several coup attempts, and his police forces were known to commit summary executions when he was the police chief of Cap Haïtien. That's the leader of this rebellion. Then you have the former military, which was brutal and dissolved by Aristide because the only purpose it served was to basically terrorize the Haitian population. And then you have the FRAP, the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti, which was a terrorist organization created by the CIA and the DIA during the early 90s, and those people are back. Louis Jodel Chamblain, the second in command of the rebellion, and I believe the real brains behind the rebellion too. He's back in Haiti, and these are the people that Gerard Latour too now wants to organize into a tree planting army of some kind to go around and start reforestation projects in the Haitian countryside. It's ridiculous. I mean, these guys are killers, and I doubt they're going to be planting any trees anytime soon. So that's Latour too, and he obviously doesn't have any serious ideas about what to do about the problems in Haiti.
Well, it'd be nice to see Latour too trudging up a hillside with a bag of trees in his in one hand and a shovel in the other.
Yeah, he'd pass out after 10 yards. But,
Actually, for the last several years, I've been seeing there's been kind of a lot of debate, you know, among leftists and progressives about Aristide. A lot of people were putting Aristide down, you know. In fact, I think even quite a lot of Haitians are putting him down because they said he'd sold out or something like that, or he's corrupt.
The opposition to Aristide, it depends on where you are. If you're on the left and you hate Aristide, you hate him because he gave in to a lot of IMF, World Bank sort of reforms, like he lowered Haiti's tariffs and privatized a state enterprise, and you see him as sort of kowtowing to the Washington consensus.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the right, then you see him as a brutal dictator, a populist demagogue, possibly involved in corruption and drug dealing and all these sorts of things. So, The Aristide is not the issue here. I know everybody wants to make it about this sort of cult of personality around Aristide. What Haiti desperately needs is political stability. There have been 33 coups in Haiti's history. Mm-hmm. And when you have political instability, projects to help the population get interrupted and then restarted and then interrupted and it doesn't work. And then investors and financial people shy away from the country because of how unstable it is. The economy goes absolutely down the toilet when these sort of things happen. I mean, it's just vitally important for a country like Haiti to have some semblance of political stability. Now, in my opinion, Aristide was the most progressive leader that Haiti ever had. I mean, in the last 10 years, the number of schools built in Haiti, there's been more schools built than in the last 200 years of Haitian history. And he's made significant progress in areas like health care. He's doubled the minimum wage. He's done a lot of really progressive things. And dissolving the military was probably his greatest accomplishment. Even a lot of his opponents applauded that move because the army was so brutal and murderous. But now it's back. You can think what you will about Aristide. But there's a lot of propaganda floating around about him that I would advise people, you know, to take with a grain of salt, and even if you don't like the guy, I mean, you can't support this coup because it's a coup led by some of the most reactionary and some of the most murderous people that Haiti has ever known.
Right. If you think Aristide is bad, look at what's replaced him.
Exactly.
It's Well, I don't know. One of the thing that occurs to me is that Haiti or any other country, that if they can't feed themselves, if they depend on, you know, outside interests for their food supply, they're really kind of screwed right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's really controversial. But like the U.S. gives a lot of food aid to Haiti,
mm-hmm.
but in Haiti, that aid is really controversial because the Haitians see it as a way of keeping them dependent on U.S. aid, the U.S. has undermined all of Haiti's local production of rice and sugar and it, pretty much every its agriculture, and you know, because Haitian markets have been flooded by U.S. agriculture products that are subsidized here in the United States, and it totally undermines Haiti's agricultural economy. And so they're dependent on food aid because they can't grow their own food and they can't sell their own food. And when you're dependent on aid like that, it really gives the country that's giving you the aid a sort of veto power over anything your government wants to do. They'll say, mm-hmm. well, if you raise taxes on the rich, then we'll cut off your food aid mm-hmm. here. And mm-hmm. so it's really controversial in Haiti, even though it does help people. A lot of people see it as a part of sort of a scheme to undermine Haiti's sovereignty.
Yeah, and then there's, of course, the famous Creole pig. We talked about that previously at Kebu, but in short, what it is, the Haitian pigs, which is adapted to the climate and the terrain, they were dying of some mysterious disease, and so the U.S. came in and sort of had the Haitian pigs all wiped out and replaced them with these Iowa pigs that are big and fat and have to live in air-conditioned pig pens and have a special feed. And, of course, everybody became quite obvious that these American pigs were living better than the Haitian people were.
Yeah, the pigs required clean water, food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 60% of the Haitian population doesn't have access to clean water. So these pigs among the peasants quickly became known as four-footed princes. And yeah, the Creole pig is sort of making a comeback now, but those pigs, a lot of people in Haiti still are forced to raise those. And in a lot of parts of the Haitian countryside, people who have those Iowa pigs are having to feed their pigs before they can even feed their family or themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in Haiti, a pig is a very big investment for a family.
Sure.
In fact, the word pig and the word bank, I believe, mean the same thing, or the same word is used for those words in, mm-hmm. in Creole.
Mm-hmm.
But if your pig dies, then you have no rainy day fund in case there's a funeral or an illness in the family. So you have to make do without food so that the pig stays alive. Because losing a pig would be like losing a house or or a car here in
mm-hmm.
the United States. So
yeah.
That's really, really sad that people are having to feed their pigs before they can feed their children.
It's amazing. We're getting near the end of our half hour, but it seems to me, I don't understand, how much more can the Haitian people be squeezed? I mean, what does this new regime have in mind? What do they think they're going to do?
Well, it looks like they're going to press for a lot of the economic reforms that Aristide resisted, that were trying to be forced on Haiti.
I wouldn't even call them reforms, but whatever they are, go ahead.
Yeah, he resisted mainly the privatization of the state-owned companies.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
the telephone and the electric company and all these
mm-hmm.
other things, because if those places get privatized, then the government will have no money basically to fund education
mm-hmm.
or healthcare or any kind of other public service or infrastructure projects. So because they can't get any money off income taxes because the rich just refuse to pay their taxes in Haiti, and they can't get money off tariffs because the IMF has forced them to lower tariffs to the point that Haiti has the most open economy in the entire world, almost. So with those state-owned enterprises being privatized, bought up by, AT&T and other companies that have had their eyes on them here in the United States, that's probably what's going to happen. And the government will probably have to scale back all of the projects in healthcare and education that have been started under Aristide.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look good.
And the people are just expected to work in the sweatshops. Is that the goal then?
The sweatshop, the industry, the textile industry in Haiti is so tiny. I mean, it doesn't employ very many people except
mm-hmm.
for like a few thousand in Port-au-Prince. Like 70% of the population is dependent on agriculture. So, which is why, the Congress here passed the HERO Act, which stands the Haitian Economic Recovery something or other Act, and it's designed to aid the Haitian economy, but all it does is loosen up, makes it easier for Haiti to trade textiles, and that's not going to help the Haitian economy in any significant way because it's such a tiny part of the Haitian economy. If they really wanted to help the Haitian economy here in the United States, they would cut these subsidies that are going to rice farmers and to sugar farmers and to other agricultural companies here in the United States.
Right. Well,
I think rice farmers, about 40% of their profits come from subsidies, not actual selling of their products. So that's really what would help Haiti, but don't expect it to happen anytime soon.
Well, I think we're going to have to end it there. And we've been talking with Justin Felix about Haiti. And thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Per Fagrang, KBOO News of Public Affairs. Stay tuned to KBOO.
Out Loud is KBOO's new lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered public affairs show, airing the second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Community events and announcements for Out Loud can be